Hello and welcome to Starkey's monthly teleconference brought to you by kosherclasses.org. My name is Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg and I'm here with Zev Steen.
Hello.
And we've had this conference going on for maybe 2 years or so. Monthly. And we decided to try something new with the advent of the web conferencing. We do have now the ability to join up with us through the web at dimdim.com, D-I-M, David India Mary, D-I-M.com, dimdim.com. And you go in there and you can join the meeting. The meeting is called Kosher, of all names.
Very intuitive.
Yeah, so it's kind of easy. If you're here, you want to hear about kosher, and that's what we call it. We recognize that there could be some glitches with this new system, or even with the old system of the telephones. We're kind of dependent on the technology, and we hope that everything will go smoothly. Please let us know how it goes. If you're joining us especially by the Internet, there is a chat capability. You can let us know if you have any problems hearing us or seeing us or anything else. Please keep us posted or after the class, please let us know by phone, 410-484-4110, 410-484-4110, if there was any problems. Today, we are going to discuss some of the technological projects of the Starkey. Zev is what's your official title, Zev?
Project manager.
Project manager. That means he does pretty much everything in the office
that
have to do with projects. So you do a lot of the video work, some of the web work, and things like that. And we have had some projects. You may be able to see it here on the screen if you're joining us through the Internet. You can see the videos that we've produced, that Zev has really produced. I say we in the kind of sense that Starkey has done, teaching how to check your vegetables for and some of the fruits for infestation. And, you know, I think the videos are how long are they, Zev?
They're between about 2 and 5 or 6 minutes for now. We're working on some longer ones, but we try to keep them short so people can watch them quickly, get the information, and move on.
Okay, so the videos are pretty short. But, you know, if a video is a minute long, it probably takes how many hours to produce?
The 5-minute one took about 6 hours of video that we cut down to about 5 minutes. But the time to sit there and edit it is months, many months.
Months of work. Okay, so you're overworked.
I have a number of projects going on at one time, so it's straight.
For that 1 minute video, so it's hours and hours and hours, and you know you see it, and it's a good video. It's available there at star-k.org or at our kosherclasses.org website. You can see it there too. I want to just throw in that if anybody has any questions, we're happy to take questions either by telephone. You can hit 1-1 on your keypad, and we'll see here that you have a question, and we'll be able to recognize you, and we want to take questions, we encourage questions, or if you're joining us by the Internet, there is a chat that's open, and you can join us and ask questions like that. So let's talk a little bit about the first video, Zev, is the lettuce video.
Right.
So what was behind that? I've seen it a number of times. It's very good. You know, what do the bugs look like? What is it like to take the video and give us some background to it?
Well, first of all, we have to decide what video to make. The lettuce one was one of the first ones because that's one of the more common vegetables people have been calling us about to ask us how they should be checking them. And once I heard from the front desk that they're getting all these calls and they have to keep describing it to them, and they themselves who do check their lettuce, they don't necessarily know all the bugs. And so I decided, well, I'll put together a video. But it takes a long time. We had to you can't just go out and hire actors for an insect video. You have to find the bugs yourself. So we went through a lot of heads of lettuce trying to find all the different types of bugs that people will find, and we videoed them from different angles and different magnifications. And after putting together the many hours of video, I had to sit down, chop it all up, and see what would look best and really teach people how to check the lettuce.
Now, while you're telling us this, Ev, I want to try to see if we can actually, you think we can show this video on, let me see if we can actually...
It's going to depend on people's...
Yeah, this will depend. If you're joining us by internet, you may be able to watch it or not. We're trying to bring it up on your screen. Okay, go ahead.
Well, as you can see in the video, for those who are tuning in on the internet, there are three different types of bugs. You're not going to find them all on one lettuce. Often you will find a few of them, different types on lettuce.
You can see the size of that. What is that? That's an aphid.
It's small. It's about the size of the letters on a coin, and right. You really have to know what you're looking for.
Right.
I speak to people, and I ask them, well, they tell me they check lettuce, they hold it up to the light, and they can look through it that way without using a light box. Then I ask them, what color do you think the bugs are? And they said, well, they're all black. And the truth is, they're not all black, which means that they probably don't know what the bugs look like. And that's what I've been finding a lot. People, think they're looking for bugs, and they tell me, I never find bugs on lettuce. And my experience is that certain types of lettuce, especially green leaf, I always find bugs. I think there was only one time that I was checking green leaf lettuce and I didn't find bugs, which, of course, was at a little conference I was giving trying to show how to check for bugs. That was the one time I could not find bugs. But I've done it numerous times showing people how to check bugs, and I've always found bugs on that. And people tell me they don't find anything. It's really a lack of knowledge on how to check for it, and that's really what this video was aiming to do, to inform people how to check for the bugs.
Now, one of our participants by the internet is telling us that you can watch this video that we brought up on the screen by clicking on the play button. We do have a question by telephone, so let's see if we can take that. We're trying to join the two processes over here. Let's see if we recognize this question here.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Thank you for your for this conference call. My name is Joe. The question I have is, the OU has a podcast also on this, and I see as I'm watching the video, it's very it dovetails very nicely with the OU podcast. The question I have is, if somebody wants to aid their native eyesight, I see you're using a light box there. Is there any kind of magnifier that you could recommend, or any specific brand of light box that is out there to purchase that's within a budget somebody could buy?
Let me just repeat the question, and that is, what is the best way to aid the natural vision? Magnifying glass or light box, what's our experience with that? Let me just point out to you, Joe, that bugs that you can't see with your eye are not considered to be forbidden bugs. If they're so small that you need a magnifying glass, then it really wouldn't be a problem. But sometimes you just don't know what you're looking at, and that's where the magnification and the light box comes into play.
Exactly.
Is this the light box that we're using? We do have some. As a public service, we do sell some light boxes. Those are the ones.
We have two different light boxes people could buy. It's really people kept calling us and asking us how to get a hold of a light box, and we just decided, we'll stock some of them, and people can buy them from us, instead of us having to try and tell people where to go to get them. And we do have two different types. There's a smaller waterproof, well, they're both waterproof, but there's a smaller battery-powered one.
That's the one from the Kosher
Innovations, right.
Kosher Innovations. They make the toothbrushes and the...
Right, exactly. So they made a light box.
The Shabbos lamps, right.
They made a light box. And
right.
Then we have the larger one, which is a plug-in, and I think that one's actually slightly cheaper, maybe a few dollars. But you can use those. You can make up your own light box. Back before light boxes were really something you could buy if you were in a photo company, my father put together a couple fluorescent tubes, put put it under a piece of plexiglass, and that was our light box at home for checking romaine for Pesach.
Yeah, but that was the old days. No one's interested in that.
No,
they want
right.
something
it
something
buy,
ready
yeah.
to go. So that's really, as far as magnifying glasses go, again, it's only to be able to help you identify something that you see with your eye anyway. You're just not sure. Maybe it's a piece of dirt or maybe it's a bug. And it also helps train the eye into recognizing what is a bug. The magnification that you would need what might be about 15x would probably be a good magnification. I actually just bought a magnifying glass online. It's called a loupe, L-O-U-P-E, a jeweler's loupe. Most of them are not sold in the world to check bugs. They're sold to check stamps or jewelry and things like that. But I bought one very recently for just $5. They're very cheap. You can't always be guaranteed that if it says 30X, it's going to be 30X. It might be just 10 or 15 times, but that should be sufficient magnification. And I hope that answers your question. And thank you for that question.
We actually picked up a bunch of magnifying glasses at the dollar store.
Rabbi
Kurzfeld,
okay.
who actually trains the mashgichim to check for bugs, picked up a whole bunch of them. They're very low-powered. They're actually more of a kid's toy, but they're good enough that you can tell that it has legs as opposed to a piece of dirt which doesn't have legs. You're not going to really see all the detail on the bugs, but you'll be able to tell it's a bug.
Now let's look at this. We're going to look here. We're going to put up the strawberry video, and again, if you're watching by the internet, you can click on play, and you'll see that video. Those bugs on the strawberries are called again. Remind me.
I think it's a type of thrip. Actually, we've been trying to.
It has a name.
There is a strawberry weevil, but I think these are actually an immature form of thrip. I have to contact some.
They're very, very small, but you can see them, especially when they move. You can definitely see them. If you see a little speck moving, then you know that it's a bug. I once got an email from somebody. He had some particular vegetable, and he was trying to figure out if there were bugs on them, and he soaked them in water. And he saw black spots, and he still wasn't sure what they were, so he put them on a paper towel, and then he writes to me that when he saw them moving across the paper towel, he was pretty sure at that point that it was infested. But these little strawberry bugs are, and then you show on the video how to clean them. Maybe explain for the people by telephone what's the process. What is the process to clean, check your strawberries for bugs?
Well, I'm going to explain. I'll explain that very quickly, but I see that we have some questions on the chatting on Dimdim, so we can go to that. For strawberries, it's very hard to check strawberries if you don't already know what the bugs look like. That's sort of the plus of the video. They're very small, but the way to check them, which pretty much guarantees, I do it to all my strawberries. It's just not worth my looking very closely at all the strawberries that come in to hurt my eyes trying to find them. I just put them in some soapy water, scrub them around, put my hands in, agitate the water, which would detach all the bugs that are on it, and then wash off the strawberries and lay them on a paper towel to drip dry. And that pretty much gets rid of the bugs. We say that you should also cut off the top of the strawberry because the bugs like hiding in the roots of the leaf, where it attaches to the top of the strawberry, the stem. So we do suggest cutting off the top. But the main thing is to wash it off and agitate it because the bugs do stick to the strawberries. Even underwater, it'll stay on it. And when you swish it around, that'll pretty much push them off the strawberry.
Well, one question that we get sometimes is that basically when we were younger, nobody heard of bugs on strawberries. People just, maybe you watch them for safety and then you ate them. Are these bugs, what happened? All of a sudden there are bugs on strawberries. And what happened? I think there are two answers to that. One is that we're more aware now. The kosher
right.
community has become more aware, and there are more people looking out for these things and trying to research them and so on. So we became more aware. And second is that they stopped using pesticides as much as they used to.
Right. They were using some very strong pesticides in the, I believe it was the 60s and 70s, and then with health consciousness coming on the forefront, and they banned a lot of the stronger ones, and they've been struggling ever since to try and find some way to get rid of the pests. Back in the when they were using the strong pesticides, it was pretty rare to find any bugs, at least what I'm told. It's before my time. Not to date myself, but it's before my time.
Back in the Civil War years.
Yeah, but I was told that people did not find bugs, even those who knew what they looked like and would check them. But just the pesticides are much more powerful. And nowadays, with organic type of pesticides, and when they want to use actual insect pesticides, putting ladybugs and praying mantises and such, it's just not as strong, and yet there's more of a frequency of finding the bugs. And we have a couple questions over here.
Okay.
Let's see. Here's one over here.
The difference between the romaine and...
The difference between romaine and iceberg. It's just...
What's the difference between romaine and iceberg in terms of bug checking?
There's less of a frequency of bugs on the iceberg. I'm not exactly sure why that is. Possibly just the iceberg. You know, people say the iceberg doesn't have as much of nutritional value. It could be that the bugs also go for the nutritionally higher.
I thought that was a joke.
What, that the iceberg doesn't have nutritional value?
No, that the bugs can distinguish between nutritional.
I mean, the bugs. They were.
I thought the reason that there are less bugs in regular iceberg lettuce is because the iceberg lettuce is more compacted and it's a head. And it's difficult for the bugs to get in, as opposed
right.
to the romaine, which is more open leaves, and the bugs can get in. I think that's really
that could be. Although I found bugs on cabbage on the inner leaves, and that's pretty tight. Also, it could be. It's a number of reasons. Probably the big one is the fact that it's just easier for them to get onto the romaine, and therefore you're going to find more of them there.
So the iceberg does need to be checked as well, but. It's less a little bit less of an issue than the romaine. I had a question. Somebody called us with a question. They had a sandwich that had some iceberg lettuce put on without being checked. And then the lettuce was taken off, but they were afraid that the bugs might have gotten onto the sandwich. And I said that's not a problem because if you're not eating the lettuce, then I'm not concerned about it so much. And I didn't think there was any problem with the sandwich as opposed to the romaine, I'm not sure I would have said that. Let me pause a moment. We're here at the Star K offices. I'm Rabbi Goldberg, and this is Rabbi Zev Stein.
Hello.
We're brought to you by kosherclasses.org, and we are both now on the telephone on the teleconference number that you dialed in, and on the web at dimdim.com. On the meeting room that's kosher, and we can take questions either by the chat on the web or through the telephone. If you have any questions, you want to talk about something, hit 11 on your keypad, and we can see and recognize your question.
I do want to mention something about I mentioned cabbage before. Back Rosh Hashanah time, people called me to ask about checking cabbage, and the idea I heard over and over again was that you take off the outer leaves. And then you don't have to check the inner leaves because, again, it's too tight for the bugs to get into. So I decided I'd make an experiment and check all the leaves down to some of the leaves they can't really use for stuffed cabbage, for chalupshas. And I sat there. You have to freeze the lettuce for a day or two beforehand and then thaw it out so you can actually peel it without tearing the leaves apart. But I froze it for about 2 days. I let it thaw for another day. This is a long process. And I peeled off the outer leaves, and I checked them, and the inner leaves, and I checked them. And I found, not only did I find bugs on the inner leaves, I found live bugs on the inner leaves. And that was after freezing for 2 days. I still found a bug. I only found two thrips, but I found two thrips still alive and well.
Well, that's a question on what we say on the flower video, that one way of avoiding the bugs in your flower is to freeze it when you buy it. And if there are microscopic eggs, they'll be killed.
Right.
And then when you take it out, they won't hatch. Which is, the bugs in the flower usually come from inside. They could come from outside,
right.
From a hole, but there are microscopic bugs eggs inside, which people don't like to hear, but that's what it is. and they're in that in the flower, so we freeze it. So how do you reconcile the fact that you found bugs in frozen cabbage and the frozen flower should kill them?
That's a good question. I mean, the research has shown that it does kill them in the flower and evidently doesn't kill them in the cabbage. I guess an idea, possible ideas would be eggs might be more sensitive, or the cabbage, you know, these are on the inner leaves of the cabbage. Maybe the cabbage itself is somewhat of a insulator to the bugs. I don't know. I do know that our experience, as well as the research I've done in the entomological departments that I've contacted, have all said that it will kill the eggs if you put them in the freezer. So we can do a little more research if we want to.
I do that with it may sound a little strange, but that's what I do with the macaroni, because that also has microscopic eggs that people don't like to hear about, but it has it in there. And if you freeze it for a couple of days right when you buy it, then that should really take care of any problem that you had. We do have another question or two about the flour. Then I want to get to talk about the chicken video that you're working on.
Okay, sure.
Is there more of a problem with whole wheat flour than with white flour, and organic versus non-organic?
Good question. I haven't actually run any tests, but that's what, you know, people contacting me is the ability to have good ideas to run tests on. I have not tested that.
I wouldn't think that the organic versus the non-organic would really make a difference in the flour. That could make a difference when you have vegetables that are organic. I definitely would think that they may have some more bug issues, because that means that the pesticide use is much less. But when you're talking about flour, you're talking about the wheat that was grown organically and then was ground up into flour.
The bugs sometimes are introduced afterwards.
Yeah, so I don't think that really would make a difference. Whole wheat and white flour.
Right. So based on the calls I get, you know, I take a lot of these calls. I have not noticed that I get more calls from people who are using whole wheat. And the truth is, I use both at home, and I haven't really found
there. There is an issue with flour, and that is, if the flour sits around in a store for a long time, then it's going to, the stores are warm sometimes, or the storage room is warm, and so flour is best to have a good turnover. It was really not really in the control of the purchaser, because he just goes and he buys it on the shelf. But the better the turnover, the less chance that you have bugs. Let's talk a little bit about the about the chicken video.
All right.
That's pretty excited as you can get about a chicken video. So tell us about it, and what kind of work went into that.
Well, we get a lot of calls over the years about people who say, you know, I have this problem. I bought a chicken in the store, and one of the bones is broken, or it looks a little red, or maybe it's bloody. Is it a problem? Is that something I have to worry about? Is I cooked it? Does my whole pot trace? We get these calls over and over again, and there are people who actually come into our offices on Friday an hour before closing and have to find some right away to answer these shilas.
Well, let's give a little background on that, and that is that a chicken that has some a problem, physical issue with it, like a broken bone, could be really viewed as non-kosher. It depends.
Correct.
When the bone was broken, for instance, right?
If when it
was broken,
and where also.
Broken when and where. If it was broken while it was alive, that's a problem. If it was broken once it was slaughtered, then once the chicken was slaughtered kosher, that's it. It's you know, basically it's going to remain kosher. The bones breaking afterwards are not a problem.
Correct.
But so that's part of the issue that people don't know, right? That's
right. People don't really know a lot about how about the kosher slaughtering process in general and how it works. And
right. So even though you go to the store, the funny thing about this is you go to the store, you buy a chicken with a kosher marking, a star K or an OU or whatever symbol, and it actually could still be a question.
Right.
Because even though those giving the certification are weeding out the problematic chickens,
right,
they could miss one. They're only human, and they could miss something, and the alert consumer has to be on top of that.
Right, and for something, if there's no way for the consumer to know, he has a right to rely on the Hechsher organization. But if there's something he can really see, then he should work with what he can do with it from there.
So how did we go about making that video?
Well,
it's not available yet, right?
It's not available yet. I'm putting the.
Can the people joining us now get a preview?
it's not. No, I'm not going to be able to. It's too large to even have it playing on this with it actually moving through the internet lines. But I spoke to the people who were involved in the chicken shechita, and as well the people involved in answering the phones to see what kind of questions. Come up both on the end of the slaughterhouse and on the end of the consumer. I spoke to stores that sell the chickens to see what kind of things that they themselves weed out or that they'll notice. I made a list of different items that I wanted to concentrate on, and then we went to a chicken processing plant. Empire was very nice; they let us come in, and I went through the whole plant. To see exactly what they do and how they do it.
Right. I remember watching Rabbi Heineman, who's our rabbinic administrator, and you're videoing him, right? And he's sitting there with these chickens, and some of them are, they're all different types of problems with them and going through. And I actually was a little concerned. I expressed my concern at the beginning that you wouldn't be able to see the color, because color makes a big difference. How red is it? Is it purple? Is it black? Is it... You know, what color are you seeing in the break that you wouldn't be able to see that color on the video? But what I looked at afterwards, you could actually really see it pretty
right.
well with the
cameras today. Can
pretty amazing.
A lot of nice.
I wonder if
color.
People could hold their chickens up to the video camera, wherever they are, and then we could give them the answer whether or not it's a problem. I mean,
that's a good question. We'll have to discuss that at the next meeting.
They could fax it to us. Here's a question: is there any way to find out if the leg broke before or after it was slaughtered? Okay, that's a good question we have via the web.
The answer is yes, and that's part of what the video is going to teach. The video will teach how to recognize, how to tell if it was broken before or after, as well as what type of breaks would be a problem and which ones would not be a problem, even if they happened beforehand.
So we're not going to tell them the answer.
No, we're not going to answer. That's a whole
because
class
it's more than just a 3-second answer. One of the signs, I'll just give a little bit so
okay.
we leave everybody empty-handed. One of the signs of a break in the chicken leg happening beforehand, while it was alive, is that the edges of the break wouldn't be sharp. They would be dulled because the chicken has had a chance to heal.
Right.
But if it breaks after it's dead, then obviously the chicken is not healing anymore, and it would be sharp as if you broke it... in your plate, it would be end up being sharp sharp edges. That's one sign. It's not the only sign, but it is one of the signs. If we have any questions by those listening via telephone, again, hit 1-1 on your keypad.
People seem to ask more questions.
That does seem to be. Well, this is a test for us.
On the chat than they do on the telephone.
This is a test for us, and we're just trying to see how it works. We see that people are asking more through the internet than through the telephone. That's fine. Oh, we do have a question.
We have a question here, too. I'll answer this one quickly. Someone wants to know if there's any broccoli video coming out. I was just mentioning with the videos I'm working on, I actually have about 10 or so videos that I have that I'm working on. How soon they come out depends on how many bugs I find. You know, in Baltimore, people know that...
10 videos?
They're not out. I'm working on barley. I'm working on the raspberries.
Oh, wow.
I'm working on broccoli, as the person asked.
Okay, sounds good.
I even have some footage for corn and for which you don't have to check, but you can look over, as well as a number of other things. Really, as I get footage, and people send me insects. Actually, I've had people send me. It's getting to me. I'm getting an influx of insects here, and I have a bunch of little beakers on my computer that everybody walks by and makes comments about with the little insects all in there that are labeled.
That's the Star-K Lab.
Star-K Lab, that's right. And as I get more and more footage, I once I get enough footage to be able to make a video, then I start working on that. Actually, the barley one I'm going to be starting on as soon as I finish the chicken one.
Okay, here's a question we have. We'll take it by telephone. Go ahead.
Yes, I just want to give one small explanation why you can find... the bugs inside in the cabbage, because when it's on the field, it is actually open. Then when it finishes, when it's done, then it leaf turns and.
Oh, okay, that's good. Okay, let me say that over so everybody. Thank you very much for that comment. Very good. He's explaining why you can find on the inner leaves of the cabbage, how is it that you find bugs? How do they burrow in? I mean, the cabbage is pretty tight. So he's saying that when the cabbage is growing, it's actually open.
Mm-hmm.
And then it ends up closing, and so it traps the bugs there on the inside, and that's how it how it happens. We have a comment here. They're calling you the bug rabbi.
All right.
Okay. Well, in the kosher world,
rabbis.
Yeah, you in the kosher world, that's an expert in bug checking is something that's necessary. There's more awareness now than there ever used to be, and you know, there are different types of people. Some people don't mind checking for the bugs, and some people don't want to deal with it. If you don't want to deal with it, then there's an answer for that too. There are reliably certified products,
right?
The broccoli and spinach and all those products you can buy that are reliably certified as bug free. It doesn't mean that you'll never, ever, ever find anything, but this process is good enough that according to the Torah law, you're allowed to eat those, and that's what they're certifying. They do that in two ways. One is through the washing, right? And we have some lettuces, Dole. I don't think Dole is under, I'm not sure. I think the Fresh Express.
Some of the Fresh Express.
Is under Star K.
It depends on the season.
They wash it under controlled conditions, and the Mashkiach, the rabbi goes and checks the
They have
the
machinery at these facilities is incredible. I mean, you're talking multi-million dollar machines that are made to wash. I mean, they don't want to have bugs for their, not just for kosher, but it doesn't look good if somebody who's
right.
interested
but,
in kosher.
But we have a mashgiach there checking, and he rejects sometimes the lots if it doesn't meet the standard. And then another possibility is to actually go to the fields. And they investigate the fields and only take from certain areas, so that removes the starting off with pretty good produce to begin with,
right.
And
or
then they
plant them in a greenhouse,
and then they wash it off afterwards. Okay, I think that brings us to the end of our conference. If there are any last questions, you can pipe in right now.
Someone asked over here if I'm an entomologist. I guess they asked the joke, but I will say I do not have an entomology degree, although with the internet and such nowadays, it's not too hard to find one, and I have contacted entomologists on occasions when I have questions. I can contact the local university, the entomology department. I have my people to talk to, so I'm not trained, but I have people who are trained.
Okay. Thanks very much, Zev.
All right.
And welcome. I want to thank everybody for joining us. We will, God willing, have again next month, the last Wednesday of each month, and I'm checking my calendar right now. It is January 28th at noon on the same stations. Please check your emails and for the latest news about it. Remember, that's 2009. So...
I keep making that mistake. I put it on my calendar or something, and I leave it 2008, and I set it for January or February, and then it sends it back to the year before.
Right. So if we could have some feedback on whether or not this new system works, we would appreciate it very much. We do have one person saying that things work very well, and we appreciate that. But if they didn't, let us know. We're always looking to improve and to better our ability to teach kosher laws to anybody who's interested. Thank you very much for joining us. And have a great day. Take care.